Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo, and Abdelbaki, if that matters. Welcome, 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 welcome. And how are you? I hope you're doing well. I'm doing well, and well am I doing. Well doing am I. Well doing am I. Yeah, whatever. God almighty. How you been? I hope you've been doing excellently. Most excellently. Today is Wednesday, the 4th of June, 2025. The first week in June. The first week in June? Wait a minute. Does that mean that the year has half a lefting blah, 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 blah? That means the year is half done, and that means there's half a year left. Can you imagine that? 6 months? 6 months? Well, at this rate, why, we'll be, a year from now, we'll be almost at midterm elections. And won't that be a splendid pie to put before the king? I know that's not how it goes, but whatever. Hopefully we don't have a king in a year. Hey, gotta smile, gotta laugh. Because if you don't, well, then you've got a problem, and that's for sure. Got to keep smiling, friends. Let's keep smiling. Look, the world deserves a smile, deserves a big kiss and a big hug, because there's way too much weirdness going on not to smile. Trust me. I've been around for a while. God, I've been around for a while. I've been around for quite a while. That's a fact. I've been doing this for some time now, and you know what? I'm glad. I'm lucky. I'm real lucky. So, yeah, we're going to talk about an interesting thing today. I'll get to that in a minute, you know. I'll get to that. We'll get to that. We'll get to a lot of things. What the heck? I'm going to talk about a very strange idea today, but next week on my show, this very show you're listening to, will be the full moon, the strawberry moon, and you know, that'll be fun. Why? Because the moon is always wonderful when it's full. I like the moon every night, no matter what. Every moon has its own personality. On June the 2nd, which was just 2 nights ago, we had the first quarter. And the first quarter is always interesting because that to me is about idealism. It's like, okay, I know I can do this. Let's find out what's going on. The third quarter is kind of reflective, you know, like, okay, how did that go? The new moon. We'll talk about that sometime. I actually created a deck that was based on that. And I tried to see where makeplayingcards.com, you know, all my decks that used to be available there, I must have taken them off, or they took them off, or, you know, something happened. And every now and then you have to re-up it, whatever that means. Or they say, oh, they're not interested anymore. They're in Hong Kong. So it's one of those things where you, you know, you have to, when you order them, now there's a tariff on them. So they're kind of expensive now. It's like, wow. Anyway, I ordered a deck for my nephew who showed great interest. He's probably the only person in my family who said, no, no, I really do want a deck. And it was like, holy cats. These things are really expensive now because you have to pay. The tariff wasn't that bad. I was kind of surprised. It was only about $7. So that wasn't so bad, I suppose, but it was enough. And I couldn't, and they're not really available for the public anymore. It was like, oh man, what's going on? So I guess it's just been so long, or I took them off the market. I don't have any idea anymore. I'm going to figure it all out. I have several decks that I've created. One for just a game that I created, which is fun. I've been playing that game lately, trying to hammer out the details. It's called 13 Ghosts. I'll probably get sued, so I have to change the name. But it's just a game, you know, trying to place these ghosts who have been displaced from their house back into their haunted house. You don't want them running around the neighborhood. That's bad. You don't want that. But it's a fun game. It's hard to win. It's a solitaire game. And trying to get them back into their home, which is in their prospective rooms. And a lot of fun. I'm having a good time with it. Fine-tuning the rules, as it were. And I win every now and then. In the beginning, I didn't win, and for months and months and months and months and irritating months. And now I'm winning every now and then. But it's not an easy game, and I don't think a game like that should be. Solitaire is fun. You want to win every now and then, but you don't want to win all the time. You have to see there's strategy involved. And so when this thing is ready, I'll make it available. Some of the cards are pretty creepy, but I meant for that to happen. I meant for that to happen. And, yeah. I watched the documentary on Pee Wee Herman, on Paul Rubens. Fantastic documentary. Quite insightful. I was a huge Pee Wee fan because he is only a couple years older than I am. He was only a couple years older than I am, and so we were from the same generation and from the same cut of jib, so to speak, in that we were both kind of imprinted upon by Saturday morning television quite a bit, Howdy Doody and Captain Kangaroo, and that same kitschy sort of thing. I still have a lot of the stuff that I collected. He got very wealthy, so he could afford to go out and buy all this stuff and store it somewhere. I had to get rid of a lot of my stuff for reasons that, you know, of taste, that my wife has taste. But I'm still looking at my some of this stuff right now. I'm looking at my my bookshelf of stuff, and like my spam coin bank, which was given to me by the Hormel people themselves when I visited them doing yo-yo work. And my daughter gave me a couple of flamingos, which is very sweet of her. And I have a lot of kitschy stuff from that era. I used to have a lot more, but some of that stuff gets shuffled off to Buffalo, as it were, if Buffalo is trash. And I had some pretty cool stuff, but I agreed that moving it time after time was just, you know, but yeah, it's a fascinating thing to watch, just about the man himself. And one thing watching the show that I realized is if you want something bad enough and you are willing to work relentlessly for it and sacrifice just about everything for it, you'll get it. He was unbelievably driven to make his dream come true. And he made his dream come true. Quite amazing, quite frankly, what he was able to do, what he was able to create. Just unbelievable. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, it's on, I think it's on Max or something. I don't know what it is. We haven't been on a vacation in 25 years, so we go ahead and subscribe to that. What are you going to do, right? But fascinating just how hard he worked and I hope he found peace. I don't know what lies on the other side of the veil. I'm kind of a, you know, just, I figure when you blow out the candle, that's about it. And I hopefully I'll be very pleasantly surprised. You know, there'll be a lot of really cool things over there, like an arcade with free pinball machines, and, you know, and your back doesn't hurt when you stand there for hours on end, and, you know, that sort of thing. I'm hoping for a lot of cool stuff, so we'll see. We'll find out when we get there. But I figure it's best to just keep it light and airy, and you know, one of those things where when you get there, you're happily surprised. But yeah, you'd think that someone who does what I do would have a lot of very open-ended beliefs, wouldn't you? But I don't. I don't. And that disappoints some people and that sort of thing. Yeah, my dad and I had a lot of really deep conversations about life and life after and all that. And he was ambiguous about it, but he really said he hoped there was something. I asked him once, I said, "So, Dad, do you believe in God?" And he looked at me like I was the dumbest thing he had ever seen in his life. Like I was just as the stupidest creature that ever walked the face of the earth. And he said, "Are you kidding?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, how can you ask that question?" I said, "Well, how can you ask me that question?" He said, "Because I guess I understand," he said, "because you don't know the anatomy of a horse's knee and ankle." Which he did. He was an anatomist, a veterinary anatomist. He said, "Because if you did, you would never ask that question." He said, "Because you would know that there's a God to invent such a thing." He said, "This world of ours is a beautiful jewel created by God. Had to be. Look at it. It's beautiful. Look around us." And as at the time, we were driving across Texas. It was dry. We were in the vicinity of Waco. And we were about to have a flat tire in a U-Haul truck. But I was moving from Louisiana to Colorado, and he was beside me. And what a wonderful trip that was. What a wonderful man he was. Boy, I tell you what, he would be 100 years old this year. As a matter of fact, on the 23rd of this month, so a couple weeks from now, 3 weeks. What a wonderful man he was. A smart, holy mackerel was he smart. Jeez. And he used it. That's the difference between some people and other people. For example, him and me. He used it. But he said, "God created this incredible jewel, and there it is. And if you just look around," and I was looking around, I said, "Really?" He said, "This is beauty. This is beauty. You may not think so, but I see beauty around us." And he said, "Look at it. It doesn't matter where you are on this planet. It's beautiful. All nature is beautiful." And I've come to realize and come to also see that beauty he was speaking of. Everything is truly beautiful. When you look at nature, when you look at what we have, when you look at the incredible gifts that we've been given as human beings, and consciousness as human beings, oh my God, the gifts that we have. I was playing with Coco, our dog today, Coco Bean. Wow. I mean, it's beautiful. It's such a gift. It's a joy. These things that we have that we may take for granted, that I do not take for granted. Not anymore. Not anymore. And he died at 59 years old of cancer because of his career. He was an anatomist, and he did a lot of things with formaldehyde, formalin, cadavers and that sort of thing, because he taught. He taught in a vet school. So it was bad for him, bad health. But anyway, so that's that. He did not live a long enough life, but what a powerful life it was. But he saw that beauty, and I see that beauty every single day. And I hope you do too, because it's around you, you know. So even though right now there are a lot of people who are bemoaning what's going on in the world, and I'm going to talk about that today. I want to talk about something that is pervasive, and I can't figure out why. hatred. Hate. What the heck is going on? Hate is stupid, in my opinion. It's a point today to show the stupidity of hatred. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I've hated things in the past. I will be honest with you. I am not immune to it. I have done it. I don't get it. I know why I thought I did it in the past. Usually it was out of pain. Some sort of pain, some sort of feeling of resentment, some sort of feeling of betrayal. Betrayal is a big one, but there are other reasons. And I know that right now, this is certainly a time where there has been so much of it going on in the world that I just had to say, what is going on and why do we do this? You know, hatred seems to be everywhere right now. It just does seem to be there, at least to me. I am dumbfounded by what seems to be going on in the world. I hope you are too dumbfounded, and hopefully you are nauseated by it as well. It's horrible. It's horrifying. It's like, what is going on? What becomes obvious to me is that with so much hatred going on, and I mean in government, in politics, which is, I guess, the same thing, with different countries, with the focus of this administration, to me, seemingly being a form of hatred, it just seems that it's what's going on. I don't know. I don't know how else to put it. That it just seems ridiculously stupid. Doesn't it seem stupid to you that that's what's going on? That that seems to be the focus? I watch TV at night, and we watch these shows about the FBI, about, you know, and there's so much violence. I saw something the other day that was so incredibly violent that it really kind of made me angry. I thought, do kids watch this show? It was a Marvel thing, you know, and it was unbelievably violent, and I knew it was not real, and I knew it was, you know, CGI or it was a model, but it was so horrifically violent, and I thought, this is not right. This is something, and it was hatred based, you know, because someone was disloyal to this guy. And I thought, oh my God, and he repaid this disloyalty through an incredibly violent act. And it really upset me. And I thought, that was stupid. That was a stupid thing to portray. It was such a violent act. And I tried to think back to my childhood. Did I see things like that? No, it would have horrified me. I remembered watching movies as they got more and more violent. The first movie I saw that was truly ultra-violent was a Sam Peckinpah film. Was it not The Dirty Dozen? It was some Western. And a friend and I snuck in. We'd gone to see another movie. It was James Bond movie. We walked out. It was one where James Bond got married to Diana Rigg, which was, you know, that was okay, but it was just so horrible. So we walked in, and it was a Western. I don't remember the name of it now. And it was horrible, but it was, you know, it was pretty gory, and we were watching this movie, and I was literally horrified. I couldn't believe it. I'd never seen anything like it before. Sam Peckinpah. And he kind of started that whole thing with the, you know, the ridiculously uber-violent stuff, which to this day I still don't like. Even though now I am inured to it, it doesn't really make me, you know, anything other than like, they don't have to do that. I'm not into slasher films. If you're going to try and scare me, give it a shot. The movies don't scare me because I saw ghosts when I was a kid, 6-7 years old. That scared me. You know, that did the job real well. So, go ahead and give it a try. I like that thrill. That's okay. But the violence to me is offensive because it's all that violence is based on hatred of some sort or greed. Greed to me is a form of hatred because you cannot try to take all the money in the world and have love in your heart. It's impossible to do. The classic story of Ebenezer Scrooge is based upon someone who has no love in his heart, because his love was killed at some point by his love for physical stuff. It literally withers his heart, this hatred for basically for mankind, because he grows a love only for things. And it really isn't a love for things. It's just a disdain for everything else. And so when he finally realizes what's important, and that is people, and a love for humankind, it really changes him. And he's no longer greedy, and he gives and he shares, because that's the truth of what's important in humanity. To humanity is sharing, a sharing of ourselves, a sharing of each other every single day, giving of what we can. And it changes him from this tightwad, this horrible, horrible person whom no one loves and no one cares for, from being greedy to becoming suddenly this incredible benefactor of everyone, to becoming the best good old friend the city ever had, you know? And that is the paradigm of, I think, what we should all want to be. Someone that is beloved, by humankind, it's a hard one to get over, those idioms of ours that are so ingrained. And yet, right now, in this time and in this age, there is hatred. There is hatred. And so much so that the ship Harvey Milk is going to be renamed. They're going to change the name of that ship. Why? Because Harvey Milk was openly gay. The openly gay mayor of San Francisco, who was assassinated because of hatred. And they're going to change the name of that ship? What type of ridiculous folderol is this, based upon hatred? And that's all it is. It's fear. It's hatred. And it's like, what are we doing? That is stupid. It's stupidity. Other ones that are going to be changed, Cesar Chavez, who was, of course, part of La Raza, you know, the revolution, for equal rights, for Latinos, and working in the field so hard. I mean, there's so many things that are happening right now that are based on stupidity. I'm going to call it the way I see it. And I think that there's a lot of that going on. And it really is something that I think we have to be aware of. And we have to be... But I'm wondering why. Why is this something that goes on in humanity? It's not just politics. What happened in Boulder? I live in Colorado. And I've been to Boulder many, 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 many times. I had a friend who lived in Boulder. Boulder, to me, was a place. I grew up in Fort Collins, Colorado, which was, you know, home of Colorado State University, a rival of Boulder, CU, Colorado University, University of Colorado, as they call it. When will I call it CU? You know, call it UC, you know, UCC. That's why they didn't call it. Okay, I got it. Anyway, so my dear friend, who passed in February, he lived in Boulder. He went to CU along with a few other friends of mine, great friends of mine. And I was a hippie freak, bum, dropout for a while. I eventually went back to college, but I was looking for myself and hiding from myself at the same time. I didn't want to do anything. And my mom would get very upset with me, and I'd get upset with her, and she'd kick me out of the house. And that was fine, because I, you know, didn't want to follow the rules or couldn't follow the rules. And so I would, get out the thumb or get in the old 1961 Thunderbird that had never been serviced and drive to Boulder or hitch a ride to Boulder and stay with my friend Bill. And Bill and I would hang out. You know, he'd let me stay with him. And Boulder was a cool place. It was very different than my town of Fort Collins, which was a cow town. That's what it was. Boulder was more about physics. It was the place where George Gamow taught there and came up with physics stuff. And it was a place about aerodynamics and meteorology. And it was really kind of a cool place. I mean, a lot of hippies in Boulder. And so it was a wonderful place to hang out. Very different than my town. I love my town, too, make no mistake. But it was very different. And suddenly there have been shootings there, mass shootings. And now, over the weekend, a horrible, horrible, horrible thing that happened, where an Egyptian national, he took a Molotov cocktails because he couldn't buy a gun because he wasn't a citizen, and he threw them at Jewish protesters protesting what's going on in Gaza and the prisoners being held by Hamas, and hurt them terribly, injured them horribly. Luckily, thank God, no one, and here I am using, I must believe somewhere, God, I want to. Well, no one was killed. They were injured, and I guess only a couple are still in the hospital. But what sort of sickness? What sort of sickness dwells in the heart? He's been planning this for over a year. Now, here's the kicker. He waited until his daughter graduated from high school to pull this off. But guess what happened? He did this. He, of course, is going to be now a permanent resident of this country, I have a feeling. Probably spend the rest of his life in prison. But they arrested his entire family, including his daughter, who just graduated from high school. They will probably be deported back to Egypt, where they're not going to have a great life, I have a feeling. Maybe I hope the best for them. But they're trying to figure out, did they know what was going to happen? Of course, I don't believe they did. We'll find out. But this is hatred. His hatred was so deep. I think he must be mentally ill, because that sort of systemic hatred, to me, is a form of mental illness. You can't do something like that. You can't pick innocent people like that without having some sort of mental illness. I just don't believe it's possible. So that means that, for example, the IRA, I mean, I know this is touchy for a lot of people, but when you start picking on innocent people, look at what's happening in the Middle East, and has been happening for decades. Hatred and hatred and hatred. I'm tired of it. Aren't you? But yet, why does it happen? I don't have an answer. You know, but all these things that go on in the world are about hate. And yet, right now, we have an administration that's bottom line is vengeance. Vengeance, which is not supposed to be us. If you look in the Bible, it says, "Vengeance is mine, I shall repay, saith the Lord." And that's, I think, how it should be. But yet, it's based upon a lot of hatred. When it was announced that Joe Biden had a very aggressive form of prostate cancer, there was an official, you know, comment by Trump that said he was very saddened to hear about that. And that was, everyone went, wow, that's really something. And then he also said later that, don't feel sorry for him, because I don't. And that was more like, and that was, what does it take for someone to say something like that? Hate. Enough hate. What we need is love. What we need is compassion. And I think that our culture does not foster love or compassion. I'm just going to say that although the religions that we practice do foster love and compassion, maybe we need to take it out of the religion more and back into the culture. And I don't know how to do that. I'm not sure exactly what the answer is. I don't know what the real story should be, but we can't just sequester it into religion. We have to do something more with it. We have to bring it back into, I mean, we've got love songs, you know, up the wazoo. love songs have been around forever. And we believe in love songs, and we believe in love. There are movies with lots of love. I think I'm just frustrated because I believe in love and I believe in peace. There's never been a moment of peace on this planet since I've been born. And probably for the 1,000 years before I was born. And I have grandchildren, and I want my grandchildren to live in a world that is more peaceful than I have lived in a world of. I think that it's unfair that we should have to live in a world where even the top of the government is filled with nasty tirades in the middle of the night, spewing hatred. Enough of this. Why do we have to be subjected to this all the time? Now, and there's no way we can stop it. Well, there is, I mean, by voting and so on and so forth. But I think that it is, there's something really bizarre about this era we're in. Hatred is its own sort of monster. Richard Wilhelm said in the I Ching, in one of his commentaries on one of the hexagrams, that hatred is like a chain that binds us to that which we hate. Which leads me to believe that we get off on it, that there is a sort of joy to hatred, that we somehow enjoy it, that it's, we relish it. And I have to think that maybe that's true, that somewhere along the line, we get off on the anger. We get off on being annoyed with other people, that we like to pick someone to really hate. I had a neighbor who seemed to always have to have someone not to like. And for a long time, it was me and my wife. It was us, my wife and me. And it was rough. In the beginning, he kind of liked us. He didn't like me in the beginning because of my perceived persona, my name, my skin color, my ethnicity. I don't know exactly what it was, but it was something around there. And then we were okay. And then we drew some boundaries, and boy, then it was just rotten, 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 rotten. And, you know, I used to read for clients out of my home. And when I had a really, you know, exceptionally, by his estimation, pretty lady come to the house, he would follow her, you know, and try and talk to her and freak them out. And I would say, you can't do that. That's not right. And he would get mad at me, you know, and these types of things. So, you know, I mean, and this caused more problems. And finally, thank goodness, he moved away. But what I'm saying is that, you know, when you have that, sometimes there are people that you dislike because they are not easy to like. And you're thrust upon them by life. They become neighbors. They become co-workers. How do you deal with those people? Well, sometimes you don't have a choice but to deal with them on a daily basis. I'm sure that you have had someone in your life that you did not necessarily like, but you had to deal with on a daily basis. So what do? You endure. We all have had someone that we have had to endure. My God, when I was really in my heyday as a reader, Thanksgiving would come around and people would come to me for readings and they would be, oh God, despondent. Despondent, because they were about to be, you know, having dinner with people that they could not stand. Siblings, usually. Cousins sometimes, but mostly siblings, that they really could not stand anymore. And I would be so amazed by that. And you'd say, okay. And some of the things that the stories I heard, oh, just blew me away. How do these things happen? Is it love? I've always heard that, you know, that love is the other side of the coin of hatred, and I don't believe that. I think indifference is the other side of that coin. I think that what happens is that when we love somebody so dearly and they do something that we feel betrays us or hurts us so badly that we just can't stand it. That becomes that idea of hate. But to, I think to hate someone in that way, there's that other type, like I mentioned, with, you know, someone you're thrust upon. The other type, that emotional kind, there has to be love still there somewhere, I think. There has to be some emotional connection. And that I think we can conquer in time. Sometimes it takes a long time. Boy, people can hurt you. I've been hurt a lot. I've held grudges. A grudge is a form of hatred. Boy, a grudge is definitely a form of hatred. I'm going to just admit it. I'm a world-class grudge holder. I really don't let go of them easily. I'm better now than I used to be. But I always say forgive and forget, but it's hard to forget sometimes. And especially when, but I do forgive. I do forgive. And that's something that I've been accused of a lot, of forgiving people and bringing them back into my life over and over and over again and have them do the same thing to me over and over again. But there are people that I love. And that's the problem. You love them, you love them, you love them, you bring them in, you bring them in, you bring them in. And they do the same thing because some people just don't change. So it's the old shame on me, shame on me, shame on me situation. I have a hard time hating anymore. I don't want to hate anymore. I don't want to be a part of hatred anymore. I want to love. You know, I don't want to be a part of anything that is that heavy. I don't hate what's going on at the top of this government. I don't want to hate it. I want to, sure, I'll criticize it if I feel like it. Sure, I'll, you know, make my comments about how it seems disruptive and how it's going to take, well, I'll do all that stuff. But I am so tired of the disruptions of psyche and the misery that's been in. I'd rather laugh, you know, even if things aren't necessarily laughable. They're certainly not at times. But what I want to do is love. Love those things that are worth loving. But I'm tired of the misery that hatred has created. Look at what's happening around this world because of hatred, whether it's hatred for another tribe, or hatred for another ethnicity, or hatred for another religion, hatred for another skin color. It does not matter. Enough is enough. And you know, you and I make a difference. Please don't think you don't. Please don't ever make the mistake of thinking that you don't matter, because you matter much more than you know. And most of you do know that you matter. And the things that you do every single day, whether it be talking to a clerk in a grocery store or a craft shop or whatever it is that you do, you know you make a difference. You know it. I have changed a mood so quickly, made people smile. I've cut with the corny jokes. You know, I watch those commercials on TV about the young people becoming their parents, and I realize, oh my God, I used to do some of that really stupid stuff, you know. I realized, okay, Mo, calm down. Don't get hysterical. You don't have to, you know, you're not that bad. But it's easy to realize that when generations change, they have a different outtake or outlook, a different take on the world. And growing up in a small town, when I grew up, people talked. We spoke. We had long conversations. You know, yeah, well, that's the way I look at, you know, that sort of thing. And they just don't do that anymore. And frankly, a lot of people aren't amused by some of the conversations that I'm amused by. However, there have been times when there have been miracles that have occurred between me and younger people. And it's been quite phenomenal. Like one time I was in a grocery store and a kid was ringing me up, and he must have been about 17 or something. And he just looked at me and he said, "What was it like?" And I said, "Pardon me?" He said, "What was it like?" And I said, "I'm not sure I know what you're talking about." He said, "Come on, you were a hippie, right?" And I said, "Well, yeah, pretty much. I was a freak." He said, "What was it like?" I said, "Oh my God, it was beautiful. It was, there were parts of it that were great, parts of it that were tough. But, you know," and that, and then we went from there, you know, until someone said, "Could we please get, you know?" I had a really amazing time with some people in a Little Caesar's pizza place one time. It was just these kids who were making pizzas. A couple of them had long hair. I went in and sat down, and it was a communication that was unbelievable. Song by The Who, Blue Eyes, Behind Blue Eyes. You may know it. It's a intense song. When you find out what it's really about, which I guessed, and I believe I'm right, based on some things that have happened to Pete Townsend, I believe it's about molestation, about him being molested as a child. It's a very intense song. It's in one of the best songs The Who did. It just blew me away when I figured it out. I went, "Oh my God, listen to it sometime." It's about having desires that you know you can't act on. But I went in to pick up a pizza. I ordered it. I sat down. And this long-haired guy with blonde hair, you know, he's probably 16, 17. And the song came out. I said, "Do you mind if I turn this up?" I said, "Oh man, I wish you would." And came on, and I started singing, and they started singing, because that was a song that I listened to when I was in high school, you know, before high school, actually. And when I was in high school, I mean, that was a great album, Who's Next, you know. And here are these guys singing, and I'm singing. And when it was over, they came out and started talking to me and asked me about the time. And I told them about the time, and I told them about SDS rallies, and I told them about watching the convention in 68, and students being beaten with clubs. And it was a remarkable thing. It was a connection that was just... that was so much better than the pizza we got from there, you know? It was real, and it was beautiful. And it was love. It was true love. And when I left, I had members of my tribe. I don't think I ever saw them again. I didn't go back because the pizza was terrible that night. Usually it's a bit better. I don't know what the difference was, but... it just was a remarkable connection with these guys. And I thought, wow, that was magical. And that's the magic of love. That was love. And I believe in that. And I believe I made a difference to them. They'll remember me. You know, I remember them. We make a difference in the world. And they looked at that moment the way I looked at it. It was cool. It was wonderful, and it was everything it should have been. That's what we are. We are members of our tribe. And I don't mean you guys are hippies, or I don't mean you guys are freaks, or, you know, we're not outcasts. We're not. We believe in something different. You know what I mean. We believe in light and love. We believe in truth. We don't embrace hate. We don't embrace vendettas. We don't embrace feuds. Yes, I hold grudges still. I can't help it because I've been hurt so badly over the years. I try and release them. I wish I didn't have some still. I still do. I try and let them go as best as possible. I have been ripped off so many times. What offends me the most about being plagiarized or being ripped off, being promised something and not receiving anything for what I've been promised. I mean, someone promises you something, says, this is what you're going to get. And you give them everything that you told them you would give them, and you get nothing in return? Nothing. You feel stupid, number one. Sometimes I am stupid. Stupid as a stupid does, you know? But the second thing is, you wonder, why can't people live up to your standards? That is really dumb, I know. But why can't people live up to a set of standards that are worth living up to? I mean, I consider myself to be as honest as I can be, and other people just aren't there. So I should let go of that and just let it all go, water under the bridge. But you just think to yourself, and I suppose the reason I do it, the reason I hold on to those things is so it doesn't happen again. Like the Who said, so we don't get fooled again. We hope we don't get fooled again, right? That maybe is it. Grudges are tough because you're hurt, and it's like a sore. It's like a scar, and you stumble over it, though. And I'm trying to work on myself to say, I don't want to feel that way anymore. I'm trying to get over it. I'm working on that, and I work on it all the time. All the time. The worst part is there are people who, you know, a person, I'll say that, who tells me I should get over them, who holds a lot of grudges. You don't want to do that, you know? And then I wonder, is this sort of thing in our species as human beings? Because if you look in the old books, the good books, all the good books, what is in there? War. I mean, God tells David to destroy entire cities and kill every living thing in the city, destroy all the plants, and salt the earth. Wow, that's pretty rough. In ancient Egypt, they fought wars. Wow, that's pretty, not until they were conquered. Then they got mad and they said, okay, well, no one's going to do this to us again. From the beginning of time, shouldn't there be a time when we just kind of hang loose and love each other? This is my dream. I mean, for goodness sake, enough is enough. And I think that we can do this. Oh, I know. Who am I kidding, right? But I'm kidding myself. And I continue to kid myself, and I will always kid myself. If it's something within us, then we have to, in my opinion, maybe that, see, my dad said, God created this jewel. And we are the guardians of this planet. And I said, we're doing a lousy job. He said, yes, we are. We are. And that's the test. And if we fail the test, then we fail the test. Then that's a problem. But we maybe will be successful. It's up to us. I said, but we're not doing a very good job. Did you see that there was an entire village in Switzerland that because of a collapsing glacier due to climate change, due to global warming, was completely engulfed by mud? You know, this glacier collapsed and whoop, there goes the beautiful, picturesque postcard village. Well, we need to change something. It's time for us to change something. Take 2 steps forward, 18 steps back, you know. But we have to keep our senses of humor. Otherwise, what do? We join the other side. I will not join the other side. I'll never join the other side. Even if it's in my species-specific notebook, you know, my manual, my handbook, let's see, page 17, flip, 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 okay, that. Okay, you will now hold a grudge and you will hate someone who doesn't look like you, act like you, talk like you, think the way you do, love people of the same sex as you or not the same sex as you or whatever the case may be. That's not me. I won't do it. I refuse to do it. I love people. I have known people of different everythings. I have known people who were oddballs my whole life. I was once sitting at the Louisiana State University Union, in the coffee shop there, in the Union, drinking coffee, and a friend of mine walked by and said, "Hey, Gary, you want to sit down?" He just looked at me, and he, with this table of people that I was with, and he just said, "You know, Mo, you collect weird." And he walked right by me, you know, after saying that, with these people sitting right there. And I looked at them, and I thought, you know, I know why he said that, but it was rude, but, you know, because these people were not weird, but they were not the usual types. Not the usual types. They were just eclectic. Maybe unusual, but they were not. But he always used to say it, "Oh, you have the weirdest people." And I thought, no, I just like people. I like people. We're all weird. We're all different. That's what makes life fascinating. When you gather people around you, when you get to know them. He didn't like them. He was a man who had, even though he was a friend of mine, he had a lot of hatred in his heart. And I haven't talked to him. Phew. It's been a long time. Geez, 50 years, I'll bet. And I would imagine he hasn't changed very much. I don't know. So I guess the point is, I think it's stupid to hate. I think it makes much more sense to love. And back in my youth, back when I was in that summer of love mode, which lasted for me for a very long time and still lasting today, people made fun of me. People made fun of us. But we did love each other. And it was cool to say, "I love you." There was nothing wrong with it. There was nothing outrageous about telling someone you love them. It was fine. And I think that it was smart. God, it was a different time back then. A lot of you listening know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you just for a second remember how it felt at times, you know, how it felt to be with your friends and love them in that way. And there was nothing weird about it. There was nothing strange. And try and feel that love again. And for those of you who weren't there, I can assure you, it was remarkable. And you can feel it now. Just know that you are loved. I love you. I truly do. And I mean it. We are part of the same tribe. I use that term again. Part of the same tribe. We are part of the same organization. We're seeking the same thing. Knowledge, enlightenment, whatever that may be. Cessation of misery brought on by stupidity. So turn away from it. Turn away from it. If you can't deal with it, then don't expose yourself to it. That show I was telling you about, I'm not going to watch it again. It was too ridiculous. It was too over the top. It's like, wait a minute, I don't need to see that ever again. Even though I knew it was fake, and even though I knew it wasn't real, blah, 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 blah. It's like, I don't need to see that portrayed. Enough is enough. I don't need to support that sort of blatant, ridiculous action. That's just stupid on my part. Let's embrace intelligence. Let's support love and right action and goodness. Enough hatred. We're surrounded by it. It's going to be with us for quite a while, I'm afraid. But we don't have to be participants in it. We don't have to add to it. I think that's the key. Right? I think I'm right about that. I think love is the answer. Let's start a renaissance. Let's start our own movement of love and not make the word something to fear again. Let's make it something to accept again. Something that doesn't terrify people. You know, it's not a commitment. It's not something to get you committed. It's just an expression of truth. I love you. And I do love you. And I mean it from the bottom of my heart. With that, I wish you a good week. Have a wonderful week, filled with happiness, inner joy, and look around this beautiful planet, this jewel, this gem. Everything is beautiful. It really is. If it's ugly, it's because we made it that way. Look beyond it and see the truth of what lies beneath it. Till next week, I wish you all peace and love. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3.